You're dialed into Reboots, featuring stories about people who have been forced to start over in life or in business. All walks of life, anonymous or named, high profile or low down. Stories with heart, soul, and grit. Because knowing and sharing our stories is essential for living a life of joy, experiencing healthy relationships, and impacting the world around us in a positive way. Here's your host, Tracy Winchell.
Hey, 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 Tracy Winchell here. So glad you're here on a brand new season of the Reboots podcast. It's 2020 and, oh man, it's been a year already, hasn't it? Hey, I'm excited to share brand new episodes centered on navigating change as a means for arriving at reasonable happiness, even in the midst of great hardship. Today's guest is a best-selling author. Dr. Benjamin Hardy has been read by, you ain't gonna believe this, more than 1,000 human beings. His work is featured regularly in Forbes, Fortune Magazine, Psychology Today, and a lot of other well-known publications. Hardy's brand new book is already making waves in the multi-billion dollar personality assessment space, you know, like Myers-Briggs, StrengthsFinder, and even the Enneagram, because his book, Personality Isn't Permanent, is all about changing ourselves. And that means the book first has to debunk popular personality studies that Ben believes tend to keep us stuck where we are instead of believing we can change who we are. Ben and I recorded this interview in the age before the pandemic, so please know that no masks were worn for the interwebs interview. So let's get to it, shall we? Hey, Ben, thanks for inviting us into your life today. Before we even get started, let's talk about the book. You've got a tremendous book out, and frankly, it looks a lot like you've walked into a Celebrate Recovery meeting a few times.
I have studied addiction here and there, yes. Addiction's been a big part of my life. So, yep, I understand to some degree.
Well, tell me about the book. Where does somebody get a hold of the book? Because we're going to talk about that, but we're also going to talk about the book in the context of navigating change and how to decide to make a change and then what to do.
Well, first off, I love your podcast because change is very interesting and very important to me. And it's something I believe in and believe is a big part of what we're here on this earth to do. So the book is called Personality Isn't Permanent. I think that it's so my former book was called Willpower Doesn't Work, which actually more directly addressed addiction. But Personality Isn't Permanent is, yeah, you know, I guess you can get it anywhere you want as far as Audible. It is, in my opinion, a book that explains away a lot of the myths about what we are, why we're repetitive, why we're consistent. Personality is generally defined as the consistent or stable attitudes or reactions we have to life. And midway through 2018, I actually read a book called The Body Keeps the Score. I don't know if you've ever come across that one.
Mm-mm, I haven't.
The Body Keeps the Score is probably the definitive book on trauma. Very important book. And at that time, that book is what led me to writing this book. I wasn't sure what my next book was going to be, but one of the things that Bessel van der Kolk wrote about in that book is that trauma creates a frozen personality, wherein your personality is stuck in the past. It's stuck in the initial and emotional reaction of whatever occurred to you, and it hasn't been resolved. And obviously, from an addiction perspective, when something happens, it can lead to a coping mechanism, such as addiction. You become as sick as your secrets, right? And so that helped me realize that one of the reasons why personality can become repetitive for many people is because of traumatic experiences, particularly emotional traumatic experiences. And so I wanted to come to the conclusion, what are the other reasons why personality may look a little bit more consistent than it really is? And what are some of the ways that it actually can and does change? So that was kind of what led me to writing this book. And I knew that this book would be under at least 100x the scrutiny of my last book, because this is a very big subject. You know, personality is the number one subject in psychology, but it's also something that impacts everyone. Personality tests are a multi-billion dollar industry. So this was a bigger, deeper, harder book to write and easier to fail as well.
Well, you've got an endorsement from Ryan Holiday, who, interestingly enough, is one of my favorite recovery authors. You know, he talks about a lot about recovery, and especially in the context of a lack of faith and how important it is to surrender to a higher power, whether you believe the way we believe as Christians or not. And I think that's fascinating, and that he has so much respect for your work and your book gives me an opportunity to just ask you about how we in the faith community interact with people who don't believe in order to give them just an understanding of how faith has changed us, but how science can change all of us.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm definitely a person of faith, believe in Christ. I think it's been interesting watching Ryan's evolution, to be honest with you. I've known him for quite a few years now, and he endorsed my last book as well. And I think it was really cool of him to actually add those elements of faith in his book, even though he's still questioning his own. As far as faith and science, part of my own belief system is that truth is truth wherever you find it, whether that's science, philosophy, a conversation with me and you. And I think, you know, the Holy Spirit can be the filtering process that you can use to figure that out. And so I'm all about truth. I think all truth leads up the same mountain. And so I search for truth wherever I can find it. And so I obviously got my PhD in organizational psychology, and I study science, and I like studying the science of change. But my reasons, and one of the things that I discovered in becoming a scientist, and I don't really know if I'd consider myself a scientist, to be honest with you, even though I have a doctorate, but in going through the scientific method and process, is that science is always viewed through a lens. Like, there's a reason, particularly in the social sciences, there's a reason that people are studying what they're studying, and the lens that I view science through and that I'm looking for is through change. I'm looking for that. I'm always seeking that. That's my bias. And so that's what I look for. And it's what I want to believe in and hope in.
Have you kind of investigated the Serenity Prayer and how hidden inside that powerful little prayer by Reinhold Niebuhr are principles of how we can navigate change? Like, you know, most of us know the first few lines of that, like, you got to have acceptance and wisdom and courage to know the difference between what we can change and what we can't, and then the courage to change the things we can, and honest to goodness, really the most powerful thing we control is us. It's kind of the only thing most of the time, right? And your book talks about that change within. What's the first thing somebody needs in order to start making a change from within in the mind?
You know, interestingly, I mean, it may be that courage, to be honest with you. I think the courage to ask for help, or the courage to share your perspective, share your story. Again, you're as sick as your secrets. And so trauma is something, you know, and again, trauma is just one of the things impacting you. There's obviously your social group, your environment, other things, your narrative and the way you describe yourself. But the things that are usually impacting and driving you are many things that you've either suppressed, pushed down. And so I think it takes courage to begin to talk about it. One of my favorite quotes that I use in the book comes from Dr. Peter Levine. He wrote the book, Waking the Tiger, Healing Trauma. And the quote is, trauma isn't what happens to you, it's what you hold inside in the absence of an empathetic witness. And so I think it's, you know, journaling is a good place to start if that's where you need to go. I think writing about your life, your situation, what's going on, maybe what led you here, where you want it to go. Not avoiding the past, not avoiding the truth. Dan Sullivan, a friend of mine and a mentor, he's got a quote that all progress starts by telling the truth, but obviously the truth takes courage. But I think journaling is a great place to start, and it's a great ongoing process for emotional development, for emotional regulation, for continuing to refine, update your narrative of the past and the future. But I think powerful conversations. Could be with a therapist, obviously, you know, could be with a sponsor, but beginning to neutralize the emotion of the story, neutralize the emotion of the past, neutralize the emotions of the most painful experiences you've had. And you do that by talking about it, by exposing yourself to it, by getting different perspectives. The goal is that the meaning of the experience actually changes so that it's no longer something you're a victim to and blaming. Cause that's what keeps you in repetitive cycles. Eventually you want it to be something that you explain the meaning of yourself. Hopefully it's something you can develop a sense of gratitude and a positive emotion for. And usually that happens through, you know, strategic conversations and being willing to open up. I'm big on the past becoming information, not emotion. So the past is something you can use as information, but it's not something that's emotionally dictating you to go one way or another or driving you to negative coping behaviors.
And it seems incredibly intentional that you go from chapter 3 in your book, Transform Your Trauma, to number 4, which is Shift Your Story. And I call part of this the Clint Eastwood principle of change navigation, where we tell ourselves the good, the bad, and the ugly. And you're right. Journaling helps us.
Journaling is amazing. Journaling is powerful. Yeah.
I did a mini series last summer, just doing really quick 15-minute hits of people who journal, asking them to share how they journal. And what's fun is that my listeners were like, oh, wait, Tracy, I didn't know I journaled. I journal too. I just don't grab my fancy notebook and go atop a mountain and do this solo write a book thing. I'm just making notations, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a healthy practice. I journal about 5 to 15 minutes every morning, but I think it's actually the whole narration process. So what they say is that identity is shaped through stories. And usually our stories are reactions, emotional reactions to an event. So something happens to you, someone tells you you're not attractive or something and you believe it, like whatever it is, an experience happens and a story comes into your mind, and the story is based on the emotional reaction rather than based on intentional, how do I want this to be framed? How do I want this to be remembered? Because what's great is that your memory is something, is memory is flexible, it's fluid, and it's very influenceable. And so
I like that word. We just invented it, didn't we?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's something you can influence. And so I think narrating the past is just as interesting as narrating the future. So I think that's big. Choosing how you relate to your former self, choosing how you relate to, you know, one of the big things that I've continued to find is that as a person actually goes through the change process, they become increasingly compassionate and empathetic towards their former self, not judgmental. You've got more context. You don't relate to your former self, but you better understand why that person was the way they were. From a psychology perspective, it's really smart for decision making to view your former, your current, and your future self as 3 different people. And so, you know, think about who you were 5, 10 years ago. Chances are you were quite a different person, especially if you were seeking change or had change experiences. Not having a negative relationship with your former self, because you actually always carry your past with you and your future with you. And so relieving that relationship may sound weird, but it's powerful.
It is. One of the things that I was able to do after a job loss, moving in with my mom, facing the sudden death of a loved one, I sort of screwed up Sean Blanc's The Note. Just totally messed it up, trying to do it, to start my own business, to write every day. And I ended up with a process that helped me write a note to my next day self and stop beating myself up, to show some respect. And I ended up, Sean let me actually submit a guest post on how I write a note to my next day self, just tell myself the truth about today. So sometimes it's an amend. Today, Tracy sort of messed up and didn't get all of her work done. And so next day, Tracy's really going to have to work hard, you know? And so it helps me tell myself the truth about myself. And so, yeah, you're right. I stumbled onto this idea that I need to separate yesterday, today, and tomorrow, today. They're interrelated, you know, but I need to respect all of those people.
Yeah, they're different people. You know, who you are and what you're gonna be dealing with tomorrow is gonna be different from what, you know, some of it may be repetitive. But yeah, I love that. And, you know, I love the just the journaling process. For me, it's journaling is a way to daily deal with what you're going through and process it. I think a big aspect of emotional development and also becoming more flexible and open to emotions rather than avoidant of them is journaling. You start to just journal about your experience and just getting it out there. Yeah. Did you have a thought?
So can you walk me through what your 10 to 15 minute practice looks like? Is it the same every day, or do you go through different phases?
Definitely phases. One of the things I've done over the last couple years is, and I'll actually just pull one of my journals out actually. So on the front inside cover of my journals, what I do is I ask a couple questions. First one is, where am I right now? So, and I go through about one of these a month. And they're very hideous when you really, some of them, you know, they are just what they are, you know, whatever you want, whatever you want them to be. But I ask myself, where am I right now? And I'll just write like five bullets of what's currently going on in my life. I've gotten into blogging again. I'm thinking about hiring a new person, whatever. So I'm just literally writing about where I am in my current life right now. What are the wins from the last 90 days? So I just write, what are the things that have happened that have been positive accomplishments in the last 90 days? It could be personal or professional. That gives you a sense of momentum and progress and change, actually, just noticing progress. What are the wins I want for the next 90 days? Where do I want to be in 3 years? And where do I want to be in 1 year? The reason I think this is a cool thing in the cover is because, first off, you can see every month how they slightly change. But also, it just allows you to quickly frame your future self and about kind of, it gets you back into that state of intention so that when you're writing, you're writing more from an intentional perspective. But as far as the actual practice, I usually end up writing about my goals. I usually write about what I'm trying to accomplish right now. I write about what I'm working on. It's very unstructured. Sometimes I'll write about experiences that have recently been happening or thoughts that I've been having. But usually it's around, what am I trying to be? What am I trying to accomplish? What am I trying to do? What do I need to do right now? It just is a way of organizing myself, organizing my thoughts, organizing myself so that I can then begin living intentionally. And then obviously intentional living towards something specific, and courage allow you to have more of those peak experiences. And those peak experiences are what allow your identity to start to flex a little bit. You stop being so dogmatic in how you see yourself, and you start opening up to new ways of seeing yourself. And those experiences can happen daily for people. And they don't have to be huge. They don't have to be huge epiphanies. They can just be small moments where you move forward, you did something hard, and you realize, oh, I can do hard things. And you can build that little courage, which then can allow you to expand your views of yourself. So I think it's just a process for me of getting my thinking right.
So we're still talking about shift your story. And one of the things that helped me untangle my thoughts from my feelings and my actions through journaling was to convince myself that I can do hard things. And this doing of hard things now starts to shift my story.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It is very much a circular process. So you can choose a difficult goal, and that goal can then dictate how you see yourself. But then once you start acting towards that goal, which is emotional and difficult, the actions themselves clarify to yourself who you think you are. So in psychology, we call that self-signaling. Basically, your actions or your behaviors signal back to you the type of person you are. So if you're doing hard things, you're like, wow, I must be someone who could do hard things. And that builds courage, and courage expands imagination and flexibility, which allows you to pursue bigger and more difficult things. You wouldn't pursue difficult things if you didn't think you could. And so courage allows you to start to build some confidence, and confidence expands your vision. And you need to be emotionally flexible to be able to deal with the difficulty or the hardness of whatever's involved, the complexity or the ups and downs. But I use my journal for the exact same thing. In my journal, I That's why I write about what I'm trying to accomplish, because I'm literally convincing myself every day that I'm going to do it and that I can do it. And then eventually you get to the point where you believe it and you start to build the confidence and the capability to match the courage. But then hopefully you keep going.
And that takes us back to the Serenity Prayer about change, accepting the things we can't change, which sometimes takes courage, and then changing the things we can, which is us. And that kind of goes back to that personality isn't permanent, where you start stepping us through the changes. And you've already kind of talked a little bit about redesigning our environment by making sure that when we're working to make a change, we're sharing with the right people, like being as sick as your secrets. If you share that secret with the wrong person, they're going to turn it back on you. If you share it with the right person, the response is, it's okay. God loves you and I love you. And that's the only response there is. And that's an incredibly powerful component of recovery, is doing the hard work of the Clint Eastwood principle and then coming in and being told that you're loved. And it doesn't, it matters that there may be consequences to your actions, but you're loved, period.
Yeah, I think you'll know it's the right environment or the right social group if they'll genuinely encourage you to courageously make the changes you want. If they're not encouraging you, or if they're discouraging you to do what you believe you should or want to do, then it's definitely the wrong group. If they're trying to keep you from courageously doing what you want to do. So that's why I think that starting to tell people what you want is key. Starting to tell people, this is who I want to be. This is what I want. That's, I think, the biggest step towards authenticity, is telling people your new story and shifting the story from your former narrative to your future narrative, and that this is the person I want to be. This is the person I am now. This is the person I'm going to be. And having an environment that supports and encourages you through that. And like you said, that they'll say it's okay. You know, we're here with you. God loves you if you stumble and fall, but they're encouraging you to keep going, and the environment can help and support you and keep you accountable versus an environment that does the opposite.
How important is habit in becoming the person you want to be and changing that personality? Like you've got Atomic Habits by James Clear and BJ Fogg's Tiny Habits are pretty spectacular. And I'm experimenting with some of that stuff, and they're tiny little things that seem kind of ridiculous, but it can change the way I see myself, especially when it comes to a gratitude practice. How important is it to learn a skill for designing habits that help us become the person we want to be?
I think it's crucial. I love BJ's work. BJ's work is really what inspired James's book. I think James has been studying habits for a long time, but I know that a lot of the big ideas in James's book actually come from BJ's research. And I know BJ personally. I know James to some degree as well, but I think learning how to develop habits is key, and learning how to learn, learning how to set goals and achieve goals. I think that all those things are good, because once you master those skills, you can target them towards anything, whether it's creating a podcast, getting married, you know, like whatever it is, like you can take these micro skills and start to trigger them anywhere. And I think really what it is it's just it's a process of identifying what you want and then learning how to integrate it into your life and into your identity and making small steps forward. Like we said, so that you can start to build confidence. And as you build confidence, you begin to identify and believe it and see yourself as that thing. And it starts to then ripple and make, you know, move you forward. So I think it's key. I think it's great. I think learning how we work as human beings is really helpful to making steps forward. And I think books like BJ's and James's are supportive of helping people move forward with recovery. You know, why wouldn't you want to learn how to develop better habits? You know, I think personality just is a habit. Whoever you are and however you're showing up is just a habit. And so if you want to become someone new, you just need to develop a different habit. As I mean, Joe Polish says, you know, that, you know, and Joe is one of my friends and he studies addiction extremely, but he says that, you know, people who are addicts, you know, or just people who are struggling in general, they've got a lot of, they're really good at developing habits. They're just, you know, they're not habits that are supporting them in many ways.
Yeah.
We're all good at building habits. We're all great at creating habits.
Yeah. We just struggle with the right ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one of the things that crushed me and liberated me all in one fell swoop was reading Ryan Holiday's "The Obstacle Is the Way," and I'm butchering this, but the line is that once we figure out the world is at best indifferent to us, life starts to change. And I mean, that just blew my mind. I was 50 years old, Ben, and never had the concept that the world wasn't my friend or my enemy. It just didn't really care.
Yeah. Yeah, I came to realize that when I was actually serving a church mission. It really hit me hard that, like, no one was thinking about me. I was not the center of the universe. Even if I did slightly odd things and people had an opinion of me, they really didn't have a strong opinion. They didn't really care. And it does liberate you. It liberates you to realize you can go do things. I think a lot of the reason we don't do things is because of the social pressure. We think that people are going to care more than they do, or that other people's opinions really matter. But the truth of it is that their opinions don't really matter. And also maybe they don't even have an opinion. So it is very liberating. We can have this conversation. Some people will see it, some people won't. Some people will love it, some people won't. But at the end of the day, you know, hopefully it creates a transformation in the people we're looking for. But a lot of the people, we just realize that the opinion doesn't matter, you know?
So where does that fit into this concept that helps us break free from the self-limiting beliefs? Because now that I know that, I catch myself realizing, oh, wait, I'm lying to myself there unintentionally, and there's a better way here. So where does that fit into this system?
I love it. Well, one thing is just realizing, you know, there's a quote from Stephen Covey, we see the world not as it is, but as we are. You know, so our current self is different from our former and our future self. Our future self is going to see things quite better, hopefully, and have better solutions and be in a better situation. And so don't overly value your current perspective, because hopefully it's going to update, change, and improve. But the freedom, there's a lot of freedom that comes from being willing to just honestly say what you want to do and who you want to be. I mean, again, flipping the script, having your future self, the person you want to be, let's just say the person who's free of addiction, the person who, you know, however you want to describe yourself and your situation in your life, having that be the story that you're telling of who you are and where you're going, and realizing that doesn't really matter. Most people, they're busy with their own lives. And so you don't have to be afraid. Rather than holding in what you genuinely want, making that your true story, making that your true story for people you meet new, telling people you've known for a long time, look, this is not who I am anymore. This is who I am. They may discourage you, you know, again, however they react. The great part about what we're describing is that it doesn't really matter. And so I think it's incredibly liberating. I think in order to go out and start doing stuff and throwing yourself out there and acting courageously, you almost have to realize that, you know, or at least you get to realize it more and more that it's the world's not really paying too much attention, you know? And so you get to do whatever you want.
Yeah. And that's so closely connected to the next part of the Serenity Prayer about accepting hardship as a pathway to peace. Like, life is hard and it can still be good. My friend Ed Saucier, the first time I heard him say this, I thought that was the second dumbest thing I'd ever heard. And he said, life is meant to be enjoyed even when it must be endured. And so this whole notion of hardship as a pathway to peace, life is just hard, and when we can start to transform the toughness of life, whether it's trauma or just learning a new skill, then we shift our story, right? And does that lead to shifting our environment, or does it help us to know what our environment needs to be to help us redesign it? I mean, they're all kind of wrapped up together.
Yeah, they very much are. What I was thinking about with what you were just describing as peace, and I think, what was it again, that section of the prayer?
Hardship as a pathway to peace.
Hmm. Interesting. I mean, I love it. I mean, the quote that popped in my head is from Douglas Mallock. It's, good timber does not grow with ease. So the poem is, good timber does not grow with ease. The stronger wind, the stronger trees, the further sky, the greater length, the more the storm, the more the strength. By sun and cold, by rain and snow, and trees and men, good timbers grow. But yeah, I mean, I think peace and hardship, I think what's weird is that they do go together. When my wife and I became foster parents of three kids, we were not ready for it by any stretch of the imagination. And there were a lot of non-peaceful days, but because we had God with us, because we had a sense of purpose, and one of the things I hit really hard is that purpose should trump personality, and purpose should be the basis of your decisions, not your personality. We had peace, and we believed things would work out, and we knew things would work out. That's essentially what faith is in many ways. I think faith and peace go very well together. But we were in a situation, as an example, where we didn't know if we were going to be able to adopt these kids. And we just had peace that whatever would happen was going to be right. And we were just going to just move forward regardless. And I think that there's a huge lack of peace when you're not doing things that require faith. I think that there's a lack of peace. There may be complacency or temporary joy, but peace is a lot deeper than just feeling good. Peace is a lot. Peace is a stillness that's, you know, that you're, I think peace comes with feeling like you're moving in the right direction.
And that's another serenity prayer concept is reasonable happiness.
Reasonable happiness.
Like, I don't have to be ecstatically happy all the time for life to be excellent, right?
I love it. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. So I've got one more quick concept I'd like to talk about. It's not a simple one, but I'm very curious on your take in terms of getting rid of our self-limiting beliefs and changing our personalities, who we are. This is a lot of hard work. I like to work hard on self-development. I'm always pushing myself, driving myself. Oh my goodness, Ben, there is this concept of surrender that Ryan Holiday is so eloquent in, stillness is the key. How do we know when we're supposed to let go and surrender of something and when we're supposed to just keep fighting to make the change we need to make?
Yeah. I recently heard, and I'm not going to get this right, that the secret of life is knowing when to do the difference, you know, when to push and when to surrender. I think that that's the secret of life, is knowing when, because they're both right. But I don't know if that's actually true. That was just something I recently heard. And so I was chewing on it.
It is, and that's kind of awesome too, is we get to hear something and then think about it and talk about it and then decide what we believe, right?
100%.
And it's okay if we say, I believe this, and then later we go, I don't know.
I think it's good. I mean, your former self saw things differently than your current self. So I hope that that continues to be the case.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that to me, it's an ongoing development. I think for me, it has to do with your relationship with God, and that as you maintain that relationship, you will get the sense. For me, how I go about this is, you know, I believe very much in, let's just say, praying with real intent, which is not just like, what should I do, God? But it's like, God, this is what I want to do, or this is what I'm going to do. To me, it's praying with faith and seeking his help. But then, you know, if this is clearly not right, please, you know, please show me that. And if this is something that you are okay with or in agreement with, then please open the doors or give me the strength and the courage. So I believe that, you know, we are here to make choices and to learn to make choices. It's almost like a kid going to college. Like, you know, like my father-in-law says, you really get to know who your kids are when they go to college or when they get married, when they leave the constraints of your home. And I think that that's part of why we came here is, you know, we needed to leave God's home and come here so that we could be in an environment where we could actually make choices and act in faith. And so I believe we are here to make choices. I believe we're here and to become responsible for our choices and that we become what we choose to be. But I do think that God obviously has far more wisdom and intelligence than us, and he can guide and direct us. But at the same time, I think he supports a lot of our choices, and that it's not always just this way or that way, but it's like you get to choose. But if it's obviously going to go a path that you're not, that wouldn't maybe serve you or best serve you or best serve his intentions, then he'll provide evidences. And I think just being in close communion with God and being in touch with God, and having a genuine relationship with God, allows you to develop that confidence in his presence that, you know, to make choices, and stand by those choices, and then to sometimes come to the conclusion and realization, okay, there's a different path.
So are you sort of suggesting that maybe God's will isn't always binary, and maybe it's rarely binary?
That's my opinion. I think his will for us is that we return to live with him. I think that there's a lot of flexibility in what we can do and become in this life. And I think that a lot of the particulars are less significant, such as, you know, whether I do this or that. Sometimes it's significant. And I think everything is ultimately spiritual. But I think that the major thing that matters is, from his perspective, who we're becoming. Are we becoming more like Christ? Christ was a carpenter, right? Like, he could have been something else, but he was still the Savior, even if he had a different career. And so I think that the main thing he wants is, are we developing Christ-like attributes? Are we becoming a better person? Sometimes he'll have specific plans or specific people. And I think that, you know, if we're receptive in communication and following and acting, you know, acting in faith and courage, those experiences will become obvious. But I think a lot of it is certainly not binary. And that's my take, is that he gives us a lot of flexibility in making our own choices, and he supports those choices, and he collaborates with us in who we become.
Ben, thank you so much for your time. Before I let you go, I do want to backtrack just a little bit. You talked about how you're blogging again, and I know you made your way as a writer by writing a lot on Medium.
Yes.
How much are you writing, and where can we access your old stuff and your new stuff?
Yeah, I think that's cool. Thank you for asking. Yeah, so I wrote quite strongly from about 2015 to 2018, and then took a lot, second half of 2018 off and all of 2019 off, really to write this book. But I am just starting to write again. My new writing is going to be on BenjaminHardy.com, my blog. For me, I don't get a lot of value out of Medium.com anymore, even though I think it's a great platform, but it's not, doesn't align with my future self. I got a great value out of it when it was a different style platform. So old stuff's on Medium, but I think all my old stuff's also on my website. So just wherever a person prefers to read. And website, BenjaminHardy.com, is where people can find more information about Personality Isn't Permanent. Obviously people can find that anywhere, Audible, etc.
I can't wait to read it. I've got a complimentary copy. I'm going to wait for the hardback and the audio book.
Brilliant. Well, I think it's going to get you. I think you'll like it.
I've looked through it, but I really want to devour it.
I'm excited for you to devour it. Maybe after you devour it, you'll have some different questions and we can push deeper. I love it. I love your show. Yeah, you're an amazing person.
Thanks. I appreciate it. I'm going to let you get to your next interview. And I'm just so grateful for your time and your work. And you inspire a whole lot of us. Thank you, brother.
Well, thank you.
Wow. I learned so much from Dr. Benjamin Hardy. I sure hope the conversation sparked some ideas that can help you choose change in your life. And in the show notes, I'm going to link information about where you can read more of Ben's work, as well as find a copy of his book, Personality Isn't Permanent. In fact, you know what? I have a gratitude course that I built early in the COVID-19 pandemic. And there's a $10 price tag on the course, but I also have a coupon code right on the purchase button so that if money is an issue for you right now, it's easy to access it at no charge. It's a 30-day challenge. The link is rebootspodcast.com/gratitude. And I'd love to gift that course to you if you're looking to make a change in your life toward reasonable happiness, even amidst great hardship. Our next episode is going to feature one of my favorite humans on the planet, Ada Floyd. Ada is a therapist. She specializes in trauma recovery. And we're going to talk about the difference between big T trauma and little T trauma. You may be familiar with Ada Floyd's name if you've listened to early Reboots episodes. She's episode 4 of the Reboots podcast, When Grief Is Your Story. Check that out between now and the time we launch the big T, little T next episode of the Reboots podcast. That's it for now. I'm Tracy Winchell, and we're going to see you next time, okay?
We hope this episode has helped you in some way. If so, we'd love to hear from you. Maybe someone you care about might benefit from the Reboots podcast. It's easy to share from our website, rebootspodcast.com. Rebootspodcast.com. The Reboots Podcast is a production of Winchell Storyworks Incorporated, a company dedicated to helping businesses and individuals know, share, and live their stories in order to impact the world around us in a positive way and to achieve financial freedom.